Blog Talk Radio.
I'm a soldier for life. The battle I'm fighting has no ending. To struggle is to go the distance. To win is not to care how far one must go.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How do we get access to this, Jackson?
His lawyers say they can get me in posing as a legal investigator.
You were Huey Newton's lawyer.
And now,
Mr. Jackson.
Mr. Jackson was sentenced 1 year to life for a $70 gas station robbery.
We have 2 hours.
Waiting a long time.
We need brothers who can maintain their self-respect in here, have true strength.
Some people are comparing you to Eldridge Cleaver, Richard Wright, Du Bois. How does your fame affect you when you're locked up all day?
Free the Soledad brothers!
Free the Soledad brothers!
Do you understand that there cannot be a peaceful revolution?
Okay, gentlemen, we're taking over.
Mr. Jackson.
Sorry about your brother.
They will live to regret it. I'll see to that.
You know what gang violence is? Mostly, and the people don't want you to hear this, somebody shoots your family member. So of course you retaliate. You know what I mean? Same thing the U.S. does, except nobody even shot their family members. You know, somebody bomb a school and all these people get killed, so the United States feel like, ooh, that's messed up. We got to go show them who's the real killer. This country was built on gangs. You know, I think this country still is run on gangs. Republicans, Democrats, the police department, the FBI, the CIA, those are gangs. You know what I mean? The correctional officers. I had a correctional officer tell me straight up, we the biggest gang in New York State. Straight up.
With violent thoughts, I wrote this, got the devil petrified, hot from my heart is broken, and so I learned to earn my currency in overtime, affiliated, clearly click a military mind, may God forgive us, so we dwell inside of paradise, thugged out and drug dealing, from the womb to the block, my live mind got me surviving 5 rounds, my 45 got me fortified with live rounds, when shit kick, we block hit, or I drop sick, all hell, I don't bail, wrath, that's who talk a list, forever ghetto, necessary, picture food stamp, outlaw thug niggas, never left the food.
Making trouble for the devil, take this gangbang shit to a whole nother level. Can you feel me now? Armies in every city, definition of power. Play it, are you with me? See the war is the prophecy, survival is the strategy. Rest in peace to my comrades, that's deceased. Organize the streets of time, yeah, these devils petrified of a nigga in his right mind. They tell us that we hopeless and hellbound. It's for the brothers and penitentiary jail bound. I got you in my heart till the day I die. Think of the damage we can do if we wasn't high. Can you picture me low? It's the thug rap. Political contracts and bloodbath. From a Tulsa core up in the rockets, though they got you. I never let them stop me. The struggle continues.
Now, if we do want to live a thug life and a gangster life and all of that, okay. So stop being cowards and let's have a revolution. But we don't want to do that. Dudes just want to live a character. They want to be cartoons. But if they really wanted to do something, it was that tough. All right, let's start our own country. Let's start a revolution. Let's get out of here. Let's do something.
Real life, bitch, from front to back. To my niggas in the world, to rock the rack. When my soldiers are dead, when my soldiers are dead. When the fuck my soldiers are dead, when my soldiers are dead. We got the real life, bitch, from front to back. To my niggas in the world, to rock the rack. When my soldiers are dead, when my soldiers are dead. When the fuck my soldiers are dead, when my soldiers are dead. Come on.
Welcome to George Jackson University Radio. We want to say Asante Sana, that is thank you, Ms. Lahiri, for joining us tonight. The show will be approximately from 8 to 10 p.m. And if anyone has a comment or if they have a question for our guest, press 1 on their phone. I am one of your hosts tonight. This is Rafiki Janelle. Umana Shakur will be joining us. But before then, we're just going to go over a few events that happened in history this week. On February the 4th of 1777, Prince Hall, the founder of the first New African Masonic Lodge, petitioned Massachusetts legislature for funds to return to Africa. This was one of the first recorded efforts by New Africans to return back to their homeland. Now, in 1822, New Africans settled in Liberia. 1913 was the birth of Rosa Parks. 1971, the Congressional Black Caucus was organized. Now, in 1974, Patty Hearst, the daughter of Randolph Hearst, was kidnapped by the Sudanese Liberation Army. Now, in 1999, on February 4th, West African immigrant Abdul Diallo was shot dead by plainclothes New York City police officers. February 5th, 1988, Manuel Noriega is indicted on drug smuggling and money laundering. What most people don't know is that Noriega worked with the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency in the 80s. Now, in 2004, rebels from the Revolutionary Resistance Front captured a city in Haiti. Now, on February 6th, was the first organized immigration in 1820 back to Africa. Now, in 1898, Melvin D. Tolson was born. He was an educator, columnist, and a politician. His work concentrated on the experience of New Africans and included several long historical poems. His work was influenced from the Harlem Renaissance. Tolson is one of the protagonists in the 2007 biopic of the Great Debater. Now, in 1926, the second week in February, was observed for the first time at Negro History Week by Carter G. Woodson. His mission was to promote, research, preserve, interpret, and disseminate information about Black life, history, culture, to the global community. In 1976, that's when Negro History Week became Black History Month. 1945 is the birth of Bob Marley. 1961 is the Dalen Movement started in Rock Hill, South Carolina. Students of the Nonviolent Coordinating Committee urged South-wide jail, no bail campaigns. Now, on February 7th was the Battle of Tabor. It was between the Emperor of Ethiopia against Haile Mariam. Now, in 1964, February 7th, Cassius Clay converted to Islam and renamed Muhammad Ali. In 1974, Grenada achieved independence from Great Britain. Now, in 1978 was the Ugandan War, known as the Ethiopian-Somali War. The war was between Somalia, and it was between 1978 and lasted approximately about 2 years. Now, 1986 was the death of Peter Dyer, the historian, anthropologist, and also a politician who studied human race origins and pre-colonial African cultures. Now, 1987, February that would be the birthday of Sandra Bland. 1991, February 7th, LSD was first elected president in Haiti. Now, on February 8th, was the death of Sizwe Mantega, who was a Zulu king. He's most known for his method of warfare. In 1925, Marcus Garvey entered federal prison in Atlanta. Now, in 1962, in Paris, eight people were killed trying to protest against independence in the French colony of Algeria. In 1972, on February 8th, New York Police Commission named nine members of the BLA, one in connection with the death of two police officers. Now, February 9th, Haiti invades the newly founded Dominican Republic. This is in 1822 and 1906. Natal proclaims a state of siege in the Zulu Uprising. 1944 was the birth of Alice Walker. Jamaica signs an agreement to become independent. In 1979, Nigeria amends their constitution. Now, on February 10th of 1837, Alexander Pushkin is fatally injured in a duel with a French officer. 1906 was the state of siege proclaimed in Zulu. In 1943 was the Manifesto of the Algerian People, which called for equality and self-determination. 1992 was the death of Alex Haley, and in 2004 the Muslim hijab was banned in France. Now, of course, there are many other things that happened this week in history, but we must move on with the show. Now we will bring on our co-host, Umani Shakur.
Revolutionary greeting. Jumbo, not way, way. Revolutionary greeting. Free land, all identified land. Free out of political prisoners. All power to the people. Education for liberation. I'd like to bring her to the show. Welcome to the show tonight, Sister Rokia Lumumba. How you doing, sister?
She went to the bathroom just now. She'll be right back.
What's going on,
Showtime, right? Not much, brother. Just reflecting on the fact that it's you know, when I was reading about Negro History Week and then Black History Month, you know, here on DJU, all the time we are always trying to educate the people. And in the words of Cardi B. Woodson, reflecting on the modern institutions, he called it the miseducation of the Negro. So a lot of times that's what we're trying to do. We educate brothers and sisters. We educate them and teach them knowledge itself, you know. So, you know, that's what my mind has been reflecting on.
True indeed. You know what I'm saying? It's a great aspect because we realize through our own spirits, historical events, that education has all been a tool that brought some kind of love of self, some kind of form of self-determination, some kind of form of respect, some kind of form of one want to be independent and also liberate the mind state and decrease the aspects of one want to be a criminal, have a criminal mindset, against man state, as well as it helped deviate and somewhat annihilate the colonialist mind state until you're completely out of it. So that's always a great thing. Always a great thing. Especially, you know, in regard to history. History is a weapon. History is a weapon for us. A tool we can use to build, to rebuild, to create some kind of foundation for ourselves. And the whole aspect, institution building, start within the mind. That start within the mind before it turns to a physical, material manifestation. So we have to build an institutional way of thinking up in our men and women so we can be successful in all our endeavors and our fight for liberation, independence. Oh, what a great thing.
Indeed.
Damn, man.
Indeed.
Freelancers, you there? Okay. Sister ain't there yet.
And we also want to encourage our listeners to go on to George Jackson University Radio, check out the website. And I know most people, especially most of the people on this forum that we listen to CJU, some have a study group, or if they have books, let us know about them. You know, we have our own book collection, but it can always grow bigger. Of course, most of our target is brothers and sisters in prison. You know, and sometimes it is not easy to get the information to them. But we always are doing so. We always put forth that effort. And I also want to commend one of the brothers here in Baltimore who's been struggling for a long time, Paul Coates, who son is the Tanisi Coates. And when he first started out, first of all, he was a Black Panther in Baltimore City. But when he first started out, he had a bookstore, and he was trying to bring books into prison. It was George Jackson Library. And he did that for a while, and people came down on him. They came down on him hard. But he's still putting out books, and he's actually trying to put in the print books that have been out of print. And if a lot of you look at your book, Soul Dad, Brother, look at that and see where it's printed. Most time it will say, it should say Black Classic Press. So that's his press. So, you know, always got to say salute to him and thank him for all he has done and all he continues to do.
True indeed. You know, brother, and pushing on with the book coming for quite some time now. I'm going to educate the mind and mass of our people and keeping it on the political education readily available and accessible to everybody, which is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I always keep the information spread, as well as, you know, I've been in the legacy as a member of the Black Panther Party, been an alumni association, which is history within itself. And we all know the Black Panther Party had a certain sets of books that everybody were entitled to read in regard to better their education and understand the working aspects of democratic socialism, the working aspects of socialism, the working aspects of power development and community development, other aspects such as that. So they had to study. You know, you just can't just go up and pick up a gun up and just start shooting people or being trained in the gun. You got to be a book soldier before you become a foot soldier. Because you got to have the mindset in order to know how to utilize your weapon to protect yourself, because we're not the aggressive one. We use weapons to protect ourselves, not to attack. Use them to protect ourselves and defend ourselves. But the whole aspect is a mind state. The art of war is a mental aspect before it's become physical. They're just trying to always keep in mind in regards to struggle within itself and what is our struggle. And one of the greatest originates of our struggle goes back to the African Blood Brotherhood, Saria Briggs, where also coming a little later on to the late Robert Williams, or the Black Armed Guard. So a lot of that Black Armed Struggle, it really goes back to a lot of them brothers like that who have been pushing the line forward in regards to trying to liberate ourselves in these hell holes known as America.
Freeland Brothers, this is Rukia Lumumba on.
Okay. Freeland, so we're going to go and jump into this. So how you doing, sis?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well, sis. Doing strong, sis. You know, it's a pleasure to have you on. We're going to jump right into this, sis. I know we ain't got much time with you. First off, can you tell the little people a little bit about yourself before we, just briefly before we take off? Who
yeah.
you are for free.
Okay. Yeah. So a little bit about me. So, one, I want to say thank you for having me on tonight, and thank you to your listening audience for listening in and hearing what I have to share and sharing what they have to share with me. I look forward to hearing people's comments and concerns and all of that important stuff. So I'm Rukia Lumumba, Rukia Kai Lumumba, the daughter of Chokwe Lumumba and Nubia Lumumba. And then I say the late Chokwe Lumumba and the late Nubia Lumumba, both of my parents, were revolutionaries who literally gave their life to the movement and died early in their adult lives, so that we all could be here to continue that legacy of work that our ancestors and their ancestors before them left for us to achieve, which is to really the total fight for the liberation of our people, to create a better world than what we've ever known, right, than anything that has ever existed. And so I continue that work. I consider myself a transformative justice strategist, as well as a human rights activist and organizer. I have passed 18-plus years working inside of prison walls and outside of prison cells to represent and prevent the caging of our people and of people in general for, you know, capitalistic purposes. I believe that our current prison, this current prison system, is not appropriate for reducing harm and violence, and is definitely not appropriate for helping to heal from the harm that has been committed and helping to help our people overcome the root causes of what caused them to commit crime in the first place. And so I have always worked to do that, to prevent the caging of our people. I also, you know, believe I'm a strong abolitionist, and I also believe that this system is rooted in deep white supremacy, and because of that, there could never be a just criminal system that is developed in this country by the historical criminal system that has existed, right? It can't have its roots in the historical system that has existed. We have to create something new that is about human dignity and restoration. So that's the work I've done. I'm currently in Jackson, Mississippi, where I co-chaired the successful campaign for my brother Chokwe and Tar Lumumba to become in 2017. I'm a member of the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement. I'm a co-director of the Electoral Justice Project of the Movement for Black Lives. And I'm the mother of an amazing son, Kadir. That's me.
Okay. True indeed. True indeed. So I know you ain't getting to a lot of activity, right? But one thing I want to know about tonight is some of your grassroots efforts in regards to your community. Just getting out and bonds to people. Can you tell a little bit about your work in regards to the people, like, such as community aid and development day camp, things like the People Advocacy Institute, and what are the things that you do around Make Everville, which is Jackson, Mississippi, the new African district? Can you tell about some of your work, community base wise and grassroots, in regards to meeting people face day to day and face to face on their daily dealings in life?
Yeah, no doubt. So the People's Advocacy Institute, we really focus on providing an opportunity for community members, for our folks who are normally not engaged, and nobody comes to them to find out what they need in their communities. Nobody's engaging them in the ways that they need to be engaged to decide, you know, what resources they need to stop violence in their community, what resources they need to just make sure there's food on the table. Nobody's really touching base with them. And so what we do is we provide opportunity for folks in the most impacted areas, the most areas where oppression is hit, where oppression has its hardest hit. We provide opportunities really for self-determination, So we find opportunities to provide financial resources to folks to build programs that they need in their communities, to deal and be responsible for residents, their own, you know, neighbors and themselves and their families. We are soon launching a participatory defense campaign where we will be providing training through our partner organizations for folks to literally defend and be a part of the defense team of their loved ones that are facing criminal charges, as well as their loved ones that are currently still serving life or longer sentences inside of prison walls. So we've had some success with that, where we've been able to help a few people get out who were serving life sentences in prison. And through our efforts, collective efforts of just helping community, of helping family members build those parole packages, build that work, we're able to get a couple of people out who are serving life sentences, and so we'll be increasing those efforts. We're currently leading a violence interruption and credible messenger program development in Jackson, where we are working with people who have been formerly incarcerated, who have been victims of violence as well as perpetrators of violence, and recognizing them as experts to help us prevent violence from moving forward. We've had a number of recent deaths in the city of Jackson, and we know that we have to do something different. We can't continue to just police our way out of violence, because we know that doesn't work. It hasn't worked ever and for our people in the history of this country. And so we're trying to do something by resourcing our community members with what is needed to actually take care of each other, right, and to prevent that violence. We're also holding in partnership with the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement, we are doing people's assemblies in Jackson. Really, with the lead of the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement, we're doing people's assemblies. We are participating by facilitating the assemblies through coordination with many community partners. And people's assemblies are a tool for what we consider community-led co-governance, which provides community members with the opportunity to be a part of city decisions, right? Actually making decisions around what the mayor should do, what city council should do, what our budget should look, you know, what should safe and healthy communities look like? What resources do we need to have safe and healthy communities? So looking at all of those things is doing what I consider shifting the tide from community being governed to actually community doing the governing, like we are governing as opposed to being governed. So those are some of the things that we are doing over at the People's Advocacy Institute. Yeah.
Okay, I have a question for you. Okay, you mentioned earlier about the incarceration people, and also the incarceration ratio, and the people that are being incarcerated. I know it greatly affects our people, and I know incarcerated the biggest business in the world, which is a big non-race operation. What I want to ask you is that have you seen a significant decrease of people being incarcerated in the city of Jackson since you've been sent to all the programs and the organizing and the educating being committed and submitted to the people?
Not yet, because they're just starting this year, right? 2019, we're just in the planning process. And so, no, we haven't actually seen a decrease in the number of arrests and in the number of incarcerated people. And part of the reason we haven't seen it is because this is a true system issue. Like, this isn't just about what happens in Jackson, because if you see what happens in Jackson, what happens in Jackson is not the totality of the problem. Actually, more people are arrested in the outskirts of Jackson on minor crimes, on crimes, than on the inside of Jackson, right? And so you have people who will say, I won't go into Madison County, period. They won't even drive. Madison County is like going to the suburbs. They're saying, I'm not leaving the city limits of Jackson, because if I leave there, I'm going to get arrested. Like, one of them cops are going to stop me, and they're going to arrest me. And it has been proven that in Madison County and Rankin County, these are suburban areas around Jackson, that they have been racially profiling and have racially profiling black and brown people, but also have disproportionately incarcerated black people at a higher rate than anywhere and sentenced people to completely unusual sentences, unusually long sentences for minor offenses. And so, or have heightened their crimes for actions that don't actually amount to the charge that they're charged with, right? And so there's actually a lawsuit in the state that is being filed now against Madison County specifically for their racially charged arrests and prosecutions and sentencing of black and brown people. And it's being filed by this attorney, local attorney, Carlton Moore. So, no, we haven't seen it. Jackson has a long way to go. What we have seen in Jackson is that recently in, what was it, October of 2018, the city decided to release officer-involved names for officers involved in shootings. We saw that happen. When that happened, the state, Gation, which is responsible for investigating all officer-involved incidents of violence, said that because they did not agree with the city and the mayor's decision to release officers' names when involved in violence and specifically involved in shootings, that they were no longer going to investigate cases in Jackson that that engaged with officers committing violence against civilians. So Jackson is now responsible for investigating its own cases, period, without any state entity providing oversight, right? You know, there's some good to that and there's some bad to that, right? So they pulled out. The other thing that we've seen is that the city has also decided that mugshots of people who have been killed by officers will no longer be used. Also, cannot be used in describing who the person was, or the media can't use these mugshots in talking about the person that has been killed, right? Because we know that that is dehumanizing. We've seen it over and over again, and it paints a picture as if they were supposed to die, as if they were these, you know, people who didn't deserve to live. And so we didn't know long, that is not allowed also. And so there's been some movement around that. I think the most movement you'll see is if you have me back on the show in about 6 months, you'll see, I think we'll be able to talk a little bit more about how we're dealing as community members, right, with tackling the violence that's happening in our community. Because one thing we recognize here in Jackson is that, you know, we can't expect the police to solve our violence problems. Right?
Indeed.
When historically, that has not been what has helped us, you know? And
Holy
so,
saw a lot of problems.
And so we're really looking to be the solution, right? We're looking as improving our neighbor-to-neighbor relationships, improving how we deal with each other when in conflict, improving the conditions that lead us to be stressed out, that lead us to be in a position where we are short-tempered, right, where we can get it upset with each other, looking at those conditions, looking at the fact that it costs, you have to make $14.82 an hour, yes, in Jackson, Mississippi, and in Mississippi as a whole, in order just to afford your rent, when minimum wage in Jackson and in Mississippi is $7.25. Most people are making less than what it costs to just simply pay their rent. If that ain't stressful, what is? If that doesn't leave you to conditions of being short-tempered, of easily being angered, of not having the patience to deal with your neighbor, like what else would? You know, you're choosing how much groceries you're going to buy versus how much I'm going to put on my rent. Like those, the conditions that we are existing cause violence. And so we're looking at how do we shift so that we no longer are living in conditions of oppression and are living in conditions of surplus. And so we are, when we're talking about this violence interruption incredible messenger program, we're talking about creating a comprehensive plan that actually is looking at how do we increase the sustainability of our community members. How do we ensure that people have housing, that people have food, that people have tools and the resources to actually engage with each other differently. So, you know, we're thinking about what does it look like to have cooperative housing where folks own the land that they live on and they own the house that they in. And you don't have to pay a mortgage. You don't have to pay rent. We're looking at things like that. How do we then look at actually cultivating that land, teaching folks how to cultivate that land so that they have fresh fruits and vegetables to put in their bodies so that
Indeed. We
can live healthier, happier lives and not be so short-tempered as well, right? Because we know that the food we eat also impacts the decisions that we make, right? And so, like, looking at all of that, and it's a skill, you know, it's a skill to develop that only allows us to be able to take care of ourselves and not consistently be trapped by having to go to, you know, the grocery store, the gas station to depend on purchasing something from somebody when we can become more self-sufficient and we can raise the food that we need to eat ourselves. So looking at, you know, big things and little things.
True indeed. So that's why I was going to mention to you the aspect of developing an economic plan. I know, in regards to every city, has a type of city plan, especially around the economic needs of the people. And they have a certain amount of expenses, a certain amount of budget to do certain things with. And I realized that we're living in a time that we actually are economic deprived. We suffer economic injustice because we don't have a particular capital to do certain things with,
mm-hmm.
and not by having a particular capital to do certain things with, that automatically leads us to an aspect of having a criminal mentality. But even before that, we know that we were already criminalized when they brought us over here and they changed the shackles. And
right.
then that was the criminalization really begun. And then especially when they created prisons and the common release, then the education system was just an extension of that because the education system doesn't identify with our social needs, our economic needs, our geopolitical science, you know, our social identity, anything like that. It only conditions us to be in a European system and have a Eurocentric state of mind. And we're not teaching any kind of skills that are going to be beneficial, such as training skills or development skills, skills of doing how to build with your hand, you do different resources, how to use the resources around you, agriculture, other aspects like that. So upon leaving the education system, American academic system, we go into the world in a state of hopelessness because we've been colonized.
Mm-hmm.
And that colonial mind state, it helps increase that criminality that they want us to have anyway, so they use it as a commodity, as a form of capital. So I applaud all the work that you're doing in your particular area and the things that I'm saying that you're doing in regard to our success, right? And I got one more question before I pass to Rafiki. So he can ask his question, open the line up for callers. So how are you going to do it? My next question is, right, out of your years of working with the youth, where have been your main focal point in regards to reaching the youth and making sure they don't become a victim of the prison Dutch slave complex?
Yeah.
What is your approach?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And what we're doing is we're going right to where our young people are. And not only are we going to where they are, but we're actually, they're a part of this team, right, a part of the leadership team, a part of the decision-making team, because they are the experts of what other young people need to hear and know in order to move forward, in order to actually engage them in processes of governing, in order to really understand and make them feel as if their opinion is valued and as if their presence is valued, period, right? And so really not like going to young people and trying to just tell them what to do or just teach them, but also doing some deep listening, right? Doing some deep listening to what they are saying are the issues and concerns that they have, and listening to them around the solutions that they have as well, right? And engaging them in the process from day one, not like providing some program and saying, okay, we're going to do this program because this is going to help you do better. No, no, we're engaging them in the process of determining what is going to help create better situations for them so that they can have better life outcomes, right? And so that's how we're engaging it. So, for example, with this violence interruption program, one thing is that we look at young people as anybody 26 and under, right? And we do that because we know that, you know, our brains are still developing up until the age of 26 at the very least. And life ain't that easy for, at 26, you still need a lot of support.
Yeah,
shoot,
you're
at
40,
right? So, like, we recognize that we don't just throw away our people because of age. Like, we there with them to support them until they can be self-sustaining. And so we also recognize their genius, because young people have a lot of energy. Young people have a lot of brilliance that as we get older, we begin to get more conservative. They're like, I ain't got nothing to lose yet a lot of times. And so we're excited by that energy. You know, we're excited by the ideas that comes from that as well. And we're excited about having intergenerational conversations that are respectful, intergenerational developments that are appreciative of what each generation has to offer. And so we include young people in all that we do. And so one of the most important pieces of the People's Assemblies as developed by the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement is that the Assembly is for everyone. The Assembly is for young people. It's for people, you know, we have child care at every Assembly, so you could be a baby, newborn, right, and come into Assembly, and we got a space for you. Up to a young person, you know, as old as 26, 30, 40, I mean, on and on and on. It's for everybody, and it is built to engage everybody. We include accessible language, but we also recognize the Assembly as more than just an event, but as a process. And so we're not just communicating with young people at an Assembly event. We're communicating throughout the days and the months via text messaging, via informing folks of what's happening in the community, what events to come up to, giving people space and room to actually send in their videos or comments about how the city can be improved, about what they want to see in their neighborhood, about what's happening on the block that we need to know about, you know, about sharing what services they have and are able to offer. So, you know, we're engaging young people in many different ways, not just in a way of we're going to teach you or tell you what to do, but instead being very inclusive and engaging in a humanistic way, in a respectable way, in a way that recognizes and appreciates the genius of our young people and to their ability to help us move and create something better.
True indeed. I want to thank you for coming to our show, sharing knowledge and understanding. I want to thank you for all the work that you have contributed in the past and the work you contributed in the present and the work you're going to do in the future. I want to say free the land, the struggle for land and independence. And I'm passing on Kari Rafiki. We have questions and comments, and he can open the line for a couple of calls. And we're going to wrap it up. Peace and love.
Peace and love. Free the land. Thank you.
You're welcome.
How are you doing, sister? This is Rafiki.
Peace. Free the land, brother. Hey.
Any means necessary. I usually ask this of all of our callers, and I like to ask it gives me a sense of your identity. What is the meaning of your name?
Yeah, definitely. I'm glad you asked. So my first name, Rukia, means she rises on high. My middle name, Kai'i, means lovable, and my last name, Lumumba, means gifted. And I was named this with my parents had aspirations that I would embody these qualities, right? You know, that I would be someone who had high ambitions that could help lead our people to better futures in love, right? With love, right? My father used to always say, if you don't love the people, sooner or later you'll betray the people. So he wanted me, and my mother wanted me, to make sure that I was grounded in love for our people. And then gifted to have the wisdom, the genius of our ancestors to fill my body and my soul so that I could be a contributor, I could be a vessel for our liberation. Yeah, so that's my name.
So, what important lessons have you learned from your father?
Oh, so many.
That could be passed.
So many. Yeah. You know, I learned a lot of lessons from my mother and my father. You know, my parents were amazing human beings that really struggled to ensure that we as a family were balanced, that we appreciated the value of loving each other as a family, of appreciating the dynamics of how that in itself is healing and necessary for our continued struggle and our ability to create better realities for our folks. And so, for example, and I'm starting there because, and I know people always ask me about my father, but I'm going to tell you right now, without my mother, my father probably wouldn't have had that he had in Mississippi, right? And I say that because my mother created community for us here. My mother created the reality where we weren't seen as these just simply black radical revolutionary folks, these crazy black folks talking about they African, but we were also seen as these crazy, beautiful black folks who cared about black people, who also loved to be in community, who slept in beds just like everybody else slept in beds, who had dinner at dinner time just like everybody else had dinner time. We were also normal, right? And we were also people of integrity, and we were also people who looked out for each other, and we were also those people that created a sense of social community, right? Our house was the house where you would have, the social gatherings, where you could bring your children and your and adults and mix and mingle and have a good time, where you could have, you know, Rosa Parks at the table, but you could also have, you know, someone like Kwame Ture at the table, right, our deep brother who we love, where you could have political debates and eat and enjoy each other's company while listening to some blast or some jazz or some blues or also, you know, some poetry, you know, with a Mary Baraka, or, you know, having the dance troupe from the heart, Alvin Ailey Company, you know, come by the house. Like, I mean, it was just a space of community, right? It was a place where you can come and buy African clothes, right? Like, it was a space, like, it was just, my mother created a sense of community where when she passed away, we didn't feel alone because people stepped up in our place, right? And so, and it was through her relationships with community that, and through my father's work in community of literally supporting people to prevent them from being incarcerated, right, to prevent their lives from being taken from them, that, you know, we have always felt the love from our Mississippi siblings, right, like our Mississippi family. And so, and that's knowing that we only have, the only biological family we have in Mississippi is literally was my mother and my father, and now it's just me and my brother and our children, right? And so, you know, that sense of community is extremely important. Building community is extremely important. Building relationships with people outside of your small circle is extremely important. And that's one lesson I learned from my parents. You know, my parents would always say, both my mother and father say, you say hey to everybody you walk by. Don't matter what they're doing, you say hello, because they need to know who you are. Because one day, they're going to need to look out for you. And that has been true everywhere that we've lived. And it has come to be true, right? But my father also taught me the importance of listening, of being humble. One of the things that people here in Jackson will tell you about my father is that he made them feel as if what they had to say mattered, that he took the time to just listen, and that they respected that, that he took the time to just make them feel human, like sit down, just to sit down. He's, the one story is brother who clearly, you know, was homeless, walked into a restaurant and needed some food, and he's coming over to folks asking for food, and the owner of the restaurant is getting agitated, and my father calls the brother over to the table and says, sit down, brother, here you go, sit down, come eat with us, right? You know, that humanity that we sometimes lose in our busy days, my father taught us how to maintain it no matter what. He taught us how to listen even when we didn't agree with what people were saying. That deep listening was a skill because he said there's always something that someone says that might have value. And so you just got to listen, right? And so he taught us the truth about listening. He also taught us, both my parents taught us deep self-defense. You know, taught me deeply how, how I have to be prepared to protect myself, right? And so from something as little as when a box comes to the house, making sure that before you bring that box in the house, that you throw it out in the yard to make sure it ain't got a bomb in it, right? You know, like things that we sometimes take for granted, right? Or how, you know, having security places and safety places so you can escape if an intruder comes in, right? Or things like that, learning how to take care of ourselves and protect ourselves. They deeply, you know, taught us that. But most importantly, I think the things that they taught us were things that we learned through their example. My father was a hard worker. I mean, from sun up to literally sun up the next morning, that's how hard he worked. Right. My phone rang. Our phone at the house rang 24/7 to the point that to this day, I don't like talking on the phone. Right. Because that's how much the phone rang in our house. And my father was there to answer it. My mother was a giver, constantly taught us the lesson that we have to share our that everything that we've given is a gift, and we have to give gifts to others. We have to give, right? Like what do they say? To those who receive much, much is expected. And so we really learned that lesson. And so making sure that we're living a giving life, not just a life of taking, right? And deeply taught us about how to never forget our political prisoners and our political exiles, our people in exile. And so, writing them, you know, being in prayer for them, you know, figuring out ways to support them, you know, those are our responsibilities. Yeah.
Indeed.
I don't know if that answered your question.
Oh, definitely. I appreciate it. Your answer is very deep and informative, and your parents definitely great leaders in the community.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome.
Well, I know I just really appreciate being on y'all's show. I hope I can come back again and talk a little bit more about some of the work we're doing and also talk and engage with your listening audience around the use of electoral justice work for liberation as a tool for liberation, not an end, but just a tool, right? And how, you know, we might be able to use that or do that, right? How to engage in that and really just engage in some real serious dialogue and debate around it. I think that's important. And so, you know, I hope to have the opportunity to come back and do that with y'all. And to share some of our progress around the violence interruption intervention that we're trying to do, because see, we ain't just concerned about ending white supremacy. We concerned about healing our people, right? Like we are really
indeed
concerned about creating a better conditions for our people. Period. Right. So I appreciate it, and I hope I had an opportunity to come back on.
Sure, indeed. So we actually appreciate you, sister, and Do you have any final comments before you log out?
Just want to say Freedom Land, Freedom Land, Freedom Land, by any means necessary. I appreciate the fact that you have this show, and I hope that, you know, we're able to continue to build. And I would just say to our people, let's not give up hope, right? Like, we got this. We will win. We will see victory. And let's celebrate the little victories as they come, the big victories, and let's recognize our biggest victories are yet to come. We're working towards them. And so just sending all my love out there to all our folks. Free land.
By the means necessary, sister.
Yes.
We appreciate you, sister.
All right. I appreciate y'all. Have a good night.
You too, sister. Peace. By the means necessary. Yeah, my final thoughts are, if you have anyone, loved one, associates, or friends, or relatives behind enemy lines incarcerated, and you wish them to be educated or become abreast of education, please link into our website, which is www.georgiauniversity.com. Again, it's www.georgiauniversity.com. Or you can go on our Facebook page with georgiauniversity.com, or you can contact us via email, or contact one of our particular workers of the Georgia University in particular, and get in touch. Reach out to us. I'm gonna say free to land for land, the struggle for land and independence. Peace and love.
Definitely. I want to echo that, and want to say that I truly believe that in this country that they're building the type of men and women who are able to change the conditions in this country. Mass incarceration is the issue of the day, and the more people that are becoming in prison, more political prisoners, and it will echo through the prison movement. So all those that are organizing inside, I want to say keep pushing the line. And all those who identify with the New African Independence Movement, long live all those brothers, and long live those who resist oppression. Moja Huma, or who?
Give the audience some kind of information.
The only way the oppressor can maintain its position is by fostering, nurturing, building contempt for the oppressor.
We have to destroy that function. That function has to no longer be a vehicle. It's one of the strongest institutions that supports the Taliban. We have to destroy it. We have to destroy its effectiveness. And that's what the prison movement is all about. There'll be no peace in a concentration camp. None whatsoever. I'm saying that it is possible, that the concentration camp for resistors. I'm saying that it is possible, that the concentration camp for resistors.